As far as sight is concerned, I'd say that wealth is a bad thing. That a person is more fortunate if he's less wealthy. For a very simple reason. Because wealth offers a person opportunity. Options. It gives a person more options. Most people are fools. So if they have, the more options they have, the more the worse they are. The worse off they are. Because they're never going to exercise those options properly. And the truth of the matter is that man by nature, see, the problem is that man by nature needs a fixed environment. What do I mean by a fixed environment? In other words, there's an optimal amount of pleasures, and if you go above that optimal amount, then you're going to be harming yourself. If you go beneath the optimal amount, you're also not in a beneficial state. But I would say this, that above the amount is much more harmful than beneath the amount. And the truth of the matter is that since in the area of pleasures there are very few people that exercise judgment, because for some unknown reason, I say it jestingly, man always assumes that every pleasure is a gain. Every pleasure is a gain. And never, very seldom will you see a person say, I will not partake of this pleasure because it's a loss. It's just almost inhuman to think that way. And in spite of the fact that it's absolutely a reality. It's a reality insofar as the enjoyments of pleasures, per se, and it's a reality certainly insofar as the expenditure of energy towards the higher level of chok. But it's very difficult for a person to do that. You know, Chazal say that three things a person should keep in a state of limbo. And it's a yetzer, a person's yetzer, and yetzer isha v'katan. That's what it says. That means to say like this. It means to say that there are certain things, Chazal recognized that there are certain things that the only way those things are good is if they're in a state of frustration. And if you try to satisfy them, then you destroy yourself. You see? Yeah. That's something, yeah. Well, that's a different thing. I don't know. But I mean, you're right in general. But the point is, yetzer in general. It means yetzer. It means the moment the person lets loose and tries to satisfy his pleasures, his desire for pleasure, he becomes a very unfortunate person. Because pleasure itself has to, by definition, is not really satisfying. But yet for a person to become an ascetic and say he's not going to partake of any pleasure, he can't live that way either. So a person should be in between. In between. You can't be an ascetic. An ascetic is not good, but a person who has free rein, just you give him all the possibilities available, make everything available for him to have total pleasure, and you see the person will be very unhappy in a short amount of time. That's because by definition, I mean, psychologically, it is that way, because what a person is looking for in pleasure is not the thing itself. It's really something. The pleasure is only a substitute, and that's why if the person tries to keep going, he finds this out, then he becomes totally depressed. You see, then the person realizes, on the contrary, that they have everything they thought they wanted, and they're still not happy, and they go into total depression. But in general, not even aside from that, if beyond a certain point, it is counterproductive, and makes a person unhappy. That's why Chazal say Yetzer has to be kept. It says Makarev be a man or Marachik the small. And you take some pleasure, you push away. Most people are very good at the yamin side, but the Marachik the small, they get it's very difficult. That's why. What does Chazal say? The Gemara says, the Chazal say that Ashirus is good for a Talmid Chacham and bad for a person that's not a Talmid Chacham. Why? For the simple reason, because a person that's not a Talmid Chacham will, of necessity, he is never going to tell himself. He has no, not a Talmid Chacham means he has no brains. I mean, basically, he doesn't know how to guide his life. A Talmid Chacham is a person that thinks about his life like a general thinks about his army. And he guides his life precisely according to reason. That's a Talmid Chacham. It's a different kind of a being, different kind of a personality. It doesn't exist in today's world, that kind of personality. And it functions in a different way. A Talmid Chacham is a wonderful thing. Because for a Talmud Chacham, options are good. Because he'll never be harmed, and he can only get more options, good. But for a person who is not a Talmud Chacham, the options are bad, because What it's doing is it's putting him in a situation where he's going to have to. If he had less options, he would be closer to perfection, because the Yetzer would be, out of necessity, the Yetzer would be semi-satisfied. But once he has options, if he indulges in these options, it causes himself more harm. And in terms of in terms of what a human being needs, it's completely, the necessities of a human being are fixed. You see, people, it's like Aristotle says. Aristotle says that people's desire for pleasure is infinite. He says the average person's desire for pleasure is an infinite amount of pleasure. So he says, because most people would rather live like animals than human beings. That's what he says, and it's true. It's very true. They're pleasure seekers, but so every option, the options are really harmful. You take a person like John Gotti. John Gotti is a killer. Killing is evil, right? But he's much less evil since he's been incarcerated. Since he's been in jail, he's been a much less evil man. So you see, options for an evil person is bad. He was more evil when he was free. He had options. Take away his options, he's a more virtuous person now. That's the same thing is true with the ordinary human being. The ordinary human being. Options are not good. That's what Chazal say. Ashirus is very good for a Talmid Chacham. The person not a Talmid Chacham is harmful. It's a harmful thing, because he'd be closer to the ideal. You see, the ideal, which is Mekarv Bimin and Merachik is Bismol. So if he doesn't have so, he's automatically in that range. He's still better off. He's still better off. Options are not good. Options are not. They're not good for the person. Not good for. I'm talking about they're not good psychologically, and they're not good philosophically in terms of the person's soul. There's neither one. In terms of soul, forget about it. But even psychologically, it's not even good. Yep. It's a very good question. The question is that how can a person do anything about the ego? The ego is the one thing you can't get anything to do about. Because if you use your ego to suppress the taivas, right? But the ego is because but you can't use the ego to suppress the ego. That's a good question. That's Torah Lishma. That's the problem of Torah Lishma. So you cannot. There is no way that you could force yourself or guide yourself to learn Torah Lishma, because you can't do it, because in the very process of trying to learn Torah Lishma, that's Lo Lishma. I mean, that itself is intrinsically, it's circular. There is no way to do it. Logically, there's no way to do it.
Start.
Yeah, so one answer is that Torah Lishma is something which takes place automatically to the degree that each human being is capable of it. It's not something that you can really induce. Well, that's what the Rambam says. Lav ko chacham zochalo, the Rambam says. Amazing Rambam. I mean, he says, Lav ko chacham zochalo. Which means to say the Rambam recognized the problem. There are two things. One thing is the thing I mentioned now, that every person has some ability, some amount. Although, unfortunately, the person that has the greater ego is oftentimes the one that's at a greater loss when it comes to this area, because he's very controlling. He can control himself tremendously, but that control is the very same thing that prevents him from arriving at Torah Lishma, because since his nature is to control, so he can't enjoy anything without that control. You see, the control can be something that turns on a person because he's controlling. So therefore, but now he can't abandon the control. He only enjoys control type of things. So that works against him in the second stage, in the stage of Torah Lishma, which is true. Okay. All right. Does anyone here not know what Torah Lishma is? Torah Lishma means that the highest level of learning is where the person just learns because of the learning itself. In other words, he's drawn to it. So he's attracted he naturally loves it, attracted to the beauty of the ideas. He's drawn to it naturally. He doesn't think to himself, I have to sit down and learn now. He doesn't think to himself, I have to have a chavrusa, I have to sit down and learn, I have a shir, I have to prepare this, that. That's not lishma. That means he's functioning because of a purpose. It means he's drawn to the ideas. So all of a sudden, he finds himself involved. See, that's lishma. He really loves it. Naturally loves it. Okay? So that's Torah lishma. Now, the thing is that this is the highest level. But this capacity, as we're saying, the problem is that this itself is going to be prevented by something which really brings a person all the way up to the doorstep almost. But then he finds himself in a dilemma. He can't go any further, and he can't force himself to go any further, because that itself is forcing yourself, trying to improve yourself in this area means that you're concerned about yourself. That's not what you're supposed to be concerned about. So it's a dilemma. The only thing I have to say like this, that's why the Ram says that love, well, the Ram doesn't really explain any way. I've thought about it a lot of times. The only answer that I came up with is like this: that there is in every person a love of reality, and a person has to come to a point in their life. I mean, maybe it's not something that you should do at this time in your life in the yeshiva. Like, you know, we're talking about something which is really. You see, in the yeshiva, a thing like this could be dangerous, because if you're just going to want to learn Torah Lishma, you're not going to learn. You're just going to waste your time. So that's why Chazal said, La'olam yomad adam Torah Kedosh Baruch Shmo. You really should, in the younger years, you should really use your energies to master learning, even if it's Shalom Lishma. It's goal-oriented learning is good. Because you've got to do it. I mean, there's no other way you're going to get it. I mean, you can't become a tzaddik just going to say, I want to learn Torah Lishma today. This is not going to work. That's what the Gro mentioned. You can't jump, he calls it jumping madrigas. So a person has to learn with a goal oriented learning. You have a seder, you have his mind, you have responsibility, you have a chavrusa, you want to cover a certain amount of ground, you want to work on ideas. It should be goal oriented. That's proper. I mean, the yeshiva years, a person must do that. If he doesn't do that, he's going to try to learn Torah Shema, he's going to waste his life away. So you have to be realistic. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with entertaining what exactly that concept is. You see. I would say like this. I would say that that there is in every person a recognition of reality, and I would say that the aging process also, the aging process is something which is very good for a person, because it gives a person a certain dimension. In a certain dimension, you learn under certain conditions, and then when a person reaches a certain level, he starts realizing that the only difference anything makes is whether you're living in reality or whether you're not living in reality. And living in reality removes from you all the false images that really guide a person throughout their life. I mean, I'm not talking about the outside world, forget about it. It's totally image. That's, image is the essence. But I mean, even among us, there's a certain images that guide you when you're younger. You know, certain personalities, a certain individual, you look up to certain people, which is fine. I mean, but the thing is that when a person reaches a certain level, those things fade away. In terms of the importance of being in line with those images, and instead, the important thing is to be in line with reality. It's a stage that a person reaches, and if a person at that stage has the ammunition, you know, he's ready, and he knows how to learn. If he can't learn, it's just a waste of time. But if at that point he's really reached a level of learning, he appreciates Chachma, he enjoys it, it throws him into a different kind of state of mind. That's the best way that I could describe it. And then the ego's not important, because he recognizes that the only thing, you see, there's a love of reality that every person has. The one thing is that I would say that people have been, talk about what the Rav meant by loneliness, you know, lonely man of faith. I think about loneliness. To my mind, I think what he means is very that a person, you see, a person is usually in life is guided by the value systems of other people. And therefore, they don't feel alone, because the mere fact that they're doing things that has the endorsement of other people carries with it a certain amount of, carries with it a certain element. A certain element of, right, it satisfies a certain need in man for human companionship. So, human companionship, like the Rambam made it a very astute observation in the Moreh Nevuchim, where he says that a person is less lonely just because he knows people are in the world. Just that alone. When I thought about it, it's an amazing idea. That if there was the difference, you could be alone on a mountaintop. But the mere fact that you know there are people around this society, civilization, that removes loneliness. Can you imagine if you were alone and and no one was in existence? It would be a frightening experience. Loneliness is a very frightening experience. But the man has a need, a very strong need, because of his early youth. He has a strong need for companionship. Now the thing is like this: that the average person satisfies that need because of the fact in the back of his mind, whatever he's doing has social acceptance. Now when it has social acceptance, it means that you're with people, whether you want to be with them. Some people like to be alone, some people like to socialize. That's just outward manifestations. But inside there's no normal person inside that doesn't have any kind of social orientation. I mean, in his mind is, it's like I one time said, the person that's the hermit. A hermit is not really alone. See, a hermit lives alone in terms of his outwardly. But inwardly, he's not alone. Inwardly, he has people in his mind. He's thinking of this one and that one. See, as a matter of fact, a person could be a hermit, and then it could be in his mind. He could have a lot of people. He thinks, what would this one say? What would that one say? This means he's not alone. See, a real hermit is not to be found. A real hermit means a person that's completely away in his mind. There are no people around, no such thing. Matter of fact, these hermits, when they interview them, they're very happy to talk. They can talk for hours. You know, I've read some of those books. I put this here, and I'm not, and forget about it. He's fighting society. He's with society. He's involved with people, and his mind is a lot of people with. So he's not really alone. But the one that really is alone is a chacham. Chacham's alone. Why? Because a chacham knows. A chacham is the one that faces stark reality. See, he knows that he's doing things only because of God and God's reality. That person's alone. See, that person's alone. Because that person's not doing anything because of anybody else. That's a very high level. And that's a person that's a someone like the Rav. I mean, who was a person who's a gadol, who's gone beyond all the figures. I mean, he faces a stark reality. That's a very lonely state. Then you don't have any other people there. That's the only person really that's alone. The person that's guided and lives in reality, without any figures, any people in his mind that endorse or don't endorse what he does. He's not fighting with them. He's not interested in them. He's just interested in reality. That kind of a thing brings a person to a different kind of existence. That's a loneliness. That's where a person doesn't have the support in the back of their minds of other people, because they're simply guided by truth. That's a different kind of existence. You can't make from emotions. Emotions are everybody's different. Everybody's different emotions. The only thing, the only universal is that you could get the energies to be directed towards Chachma, and once the energy is directed towards Chachma, then everything falls in line. You understand what I mean? But you can't take an emotion, make yourself like it. Besides, it wouldn't be a good thing anyways. Because let's say, for instance, that's right. You did. But the only way, exactly, the only way is through Chachma. That's the only way for a person to protect himself. It's through Chachma Yedias Hashem. That's the only way. The other way isn't working. You can't do it. I mean, Rasul Salanta said that how is it possible that a person could have a son and a Talmud, and he wake him up in the middle of the night, Talmud's house on fire, so he'll go and try to go save his son, even though his son is not Maris, and the Talmud is a great Tamachal. So he said, you see, that a person unconsciously will always revert back. It's a good observation. Always revert back. He says, then it'll take him a long time. By the time he'll work out the that he should save his Talmud, that it'll be too late. Yeah, so he tried to work on getting the emotions in line with the but it's not something you can't do that. The only way that a person can perfect himself is not by working on those emotions and changing their character, because you can't do that, because those emotions by definition are not related to any kind of perfection, and you can't give them perfection. The only thing you can do is direct the energy to Chachma, and a person's directed to Chachma, these emotions don't mean anything. Okay. I say don't mean anything. I say with regard to, like I said, with regard to last Sunday, with regard to Yaakov Avinu, that a Chacham has emotions too, but his emotions are really it's only possible, like by Yaakov. He loved Yosef, but only because of the fact that he was a great Chacham. If Yosef was a dummy, was just a regular person, an ignorant person, he couldn't favor him. They wouldn't have anything to do with him practically. I mean, he wouldn't say he's a son, yeah, but the emotion can only thrive when there's chokhma, it's in an environment of chokhma. So he loved Yosef more because kibar chakim olay, because he was a great chokhma. And that allowed the emotion to allow him to experience the emotion. But just because it's Rachel's son, he couldn't, that would be like an empty emotion. The chokhma can't have that. But he could enjoy the emotion. If there's a reality there, if he's a chacham, then he enjoys the emotion.
So why do you love Rachel more than Leah?
That's what I spoke about Sunday. Yeah, Rachel, that is something which two things. That was basically like and dislike is based upon a person's emotions. That's number one. And also you see that's why Leah thought that she'd win him over because of her perfection. You know, because of her accomplishments or perfection, but it didn't work, because that's the way it is. It's the nature of Tev Adam, is that and also there were certain qualities in Rachel that Leah didn't have, but that's something a person cannot will himself to like somebody, can't. So he really never could switch it. She was thrown on him, Leah. Now he didn't want her. He really didn't want her, and he never really never really came attached to her. The way that it was attached to Rachel, they can't change it. But that was Ashgacha was that she was supposed to play an important role in producing Shiftei Kah, producing Kah Yisrael. That was Ashgacha. That was the Shidduch of the Ashgacha. The greater person partakes of the emotions in a different manner. He doesn't change the quality and nature of the emotion. That you can't do. It's futile. Try to do that is a waste of time. Cannot change the emotions have a certain nature and quality. You can't change them. I don't care how much a person concentrates on it. You can't change it. But if a person raises himself to a higher level, his energy is in a different way. So then he can't enjoy certain emotions unless it's accompanied by chachma. It's like a person. You take two people. You put them by beautiful scenery. One person is just an empty-headed person. He enjoys the scenery for a while. I mean, how long can he enjoy it? Enjoy. Another person involved in thought and learning and ideas. He enjoys the scenery too, but he can't. But it's only an environment for him to be learning in. The learning is essentially without the learning, he can't enjoy it. He can't enjoy anything. If a person's tied to Chachma, every experience becomes infused with a. With Chachma. It's a different kind of experience. So he enjoys his emotions, partakes of the emotions, but in a totally different way. In a different quantity and in a different way. And the truth of the matter is he enjoys it more than the other person. Because the other person is trying to find in this emotion the ultimate satisfaction which it can't possibly give the person. So it has to win in frustration. The person who's in Chachma, he enjoys it for what it is. So he really partakes in the enjoyment. He's not frustrated. On the contrary, he enjoys it. Yes. The same thing. The emotions of anger and hatred also. You can't change them. The person who is a really a chacham simply finds out there's nothing to get angry about. You say there's nothing to get angry about. There's nothing to get angry. Anger. That's right. And what was the other emotion you mentioned?
Hatred.
There's nothing to hate anybody for. There's no, the emotion of hate doesn't make sense. There's no reason for it. It's just unless it's a philosophical hate, like the hate of a molech, or the hate of the hate of somebody that's destroying Torah. That's a philosophical hate. But on an emotional level, there's no reason for it. Why should you hate anybody? There's no reason. Yeah, the Rambam. The Rambam's method. Yeah, the Rambam's method is correct. Right. That's right. The Rambam doesn't say you change the emotions. The Rambam says you partake of them to a certain degree. Certain degree. That's the thing, is moderation. In other words, you don't partake of an emotion, you stop. You have to know where to stop. That's what it's all about for. Moderation. Moderation is right. That's what I said. That's what the Chazal say. That Yetzer is Makar Bimin and Rach Mismal. It's interesting. Three things. It says Yetzer, Isha, and the Kutin. See? It means in the relationship between man and wife. It means both, wife to the man to the wife, same thing. It speaks in terms of the man, but same idea. It means to say that in a love relationship, if a person will try to seek their full satisfaction out of that, they're going to be miserable. See? So it's makar v'mim rach v'smal. It means to say that, and then again, for a person to live without love is also love to avedim was a chazal say. A person not considered a person until the zochan akeva bra'om. So it means to say that that a man has to have someone. He has to have a mate, so a companion, somebody that is that works with him. But it's mekar v'min rachum small. The person that's today's society. That love is the person going to find fall in love, and that's going to be happy. For a few weeks maybe. That's it. But the thing is, it's something which if that is where you're going to gain your satisfaction, your ultimate satisfaction, has to lead to total destruction, has to. But again, for a person to be an ascetic, I mean, let's Ben Azai wasn't an ascetic. Ben Azai really had so much enjoyment out of learning that he didn't need it. But that's a remarkable, unusual person. Nobody's like that. But a more normal person. Is not capable of such an abnormal degree of sublimation. I mean, a regular person can't do that. So, but to be an ascetic is wrong. But again, to look for your ultimate satisfaction in that, then you just be frustrated. That's when the marriage falls apart. That's a big problem. And also, cutting is a child. A child's desires are endless. If you want to satisfy a child, you're spend your whole life. You'll never satisfy the child, and you'll ruin the child. Besides, because the child himself has to learn that satisfaction, you have to be in a state of limbo. That's the way life is. You see, man is constructed that way precisely in order that he should be able to obtain his ultimate satisfaction in the Chochmas HaTorah. That's why man is constructed that way. If those pleasures were in fact truly satisfying, you see, then Torah wouldn't have a chance. The fact is that God structured the human psyche in a way that the only thing that is really satisfying is learning. And when he's learning and he's in learning, he's involved learning, then everything is good. And he's out, that nothing's good. He can fool himself. That's the world. I mean, the world does not know the answer. It's unfortunate. They don't know the answer. So what do they do? A person has to live. He either kill himself or else he's going to continue to live. He wants to live. He has to have a hope, something. So he keeps on telling himself that the next greater pleasure is going to be the one that's going to make him really happy. And he keeps going. If a person is a normal person, he lives that way the rest of his life, and that's it. If a person starts seeing that it's not working, and it's unfortunate, and then their lives become wrecks. Yes. Yes, there is a criterion. This is important. There is a criterion. The criterion, and this is the thing. See, it's not so much the criterion. It's the ability of the person to use his mind in this area. That's what I want to tell you. In other words, the criterion gives rise to some criterion. But the important thing is for a person to be able to do that. In other words, for a person to be able to be confronted with a pleasure which he can have and say to himself, should I, am I really going to gain, Should I partake of this pleasure? That question, nobody places that question before themselves. That's the problem. You understand what I mean? The problem is the first step over here. I can give you the criteria. I'm telling you, criteria is not the problem. The problem is the first step. Can a person do this? The average person, certainly, even above average person, cannot do that. So I'm telling you, the difficult thing is to make that first step. So I'd rather answer first how you make the first step. Okay? The first step has to be made based upon reality. In other words, the person has to just ask himself one question. If I partake of this pleasure now, which really has me going, you know what I mean, really has me going, how much happier am I going to be tomorrow, you see, or a week from now, or a month from now? See, that is the first step towards reality, where the person, that throws the pleasure into perspective. Because the pleasure wants you to believe that this is going to give you the ultimate happiness. Okay? But the moment you reflect rationally, you say, well, just a moment, a month from now, is this going to make me any, am I going to be happier really a month from now? Then you have to take a look at the other side of the coin. If you learn now, partake of knowledge now, will you be happier in a month from now? If you gain some insight, will you be happier? There's no question about it. That even in terms of ego satisfaction, nobody looks back with ego satisfaction unless the person really far gone. But ego satisfaction on the pleasures he had, but the learning, the extra thing that he learned, he will always be happy about. Never will a person say, I don't know any person that would say, I'm sorry I learned today. Never is such a thing. No matter how hard it is, no matter how difficult it is, and sometimes it's very difficult, very taxing, but the fact is, you cannot look back and say that I regret it. I regret it. Can't, right? So therefore, you have to, if you know that in reality, before you embark on that pleasure, you have to, that's what Chazal say, Al-Ken Yom Emotion Va'u Cheshbon. The pasuk says, Al-Ken Yom Ruh HaMoshlim Ba'u Cheshbon. That's a pasuk in Chukas, in Chukas. So Chazal used that pasuk to hang an idea on it. Cheshbon. Cheshbon means to make an account. So they say, Bo'u V'nachshov Cheshbono Shel Olam. Let's figure it out. Schar mitzvah keneged hafseido. So to weigh the schar mitzvah keneged hafseido. It means to say that everything, it means it's a balance, it's a calculation. Al ken yomer ha-moshlim, Chazal say, who are the Moshlim? Elu ha-moshlim b'yitzvah. Moshe b'yitzvah is a different kind of phenomenon. It means it's a different kind of person. You don't find such a person out there in the world. If you told somebody something like this, they think you're absolutely crazy. Never is such a thing. What do you mean? The guy's about to have a tremendous enjoyment. Say, one second, I think it's over. And he said, is this worth it? Maybe it's not worth it for me. You see? No such idea. Moshlim means Eloha Moshlim Yitzchum is a different kind of human being, different kind of person. That's a tamachah. So it means to say, if a person could just make that first move, what does Chazal say? Al King Yomer HaMoshlim Bo'u Cheshbon. Bo'u Cheshbon means come and let's make an account. If you could do that, then you're Moshlim Yitzchum. That's what I'm telling you. The first step is the hardest step. First step, that's where if you can get to the first step, the rest is easy. The first step is very hard. The person to say, just a minute, this is a wonderful pleasure. I'm going to experience tremendous pleasure from this. But what is the outcome? Is it worth it? What is the gain? What's the loss? A month from now, am I going to be, where am I going to be a month from now based on it? Am I going to be ahead? Will I be happy I did this? Or would I be happy if I sat and learned if I did something else? To weigh it. And to weigh it, every type of enjoyment is different. Sometimes on the contrary. Sometimes the enjoyment you should partake in it. Yeah, you need it. You need it. That's what that means. Cheshbon. Cheshbon means to really weigh it. But people always fool themselves into thinking that they need it. It always comes out somehow or other. The scale always is in one side. It's no good. Something wrong here. Something wrong. if the balance is always in favor of the enjoyment, that means that the weighing was not really, it wasn't an honest meter. It wasn't an honest scale. So the thing is that first step is the key. The person can do that. That's the key. Chazal give you the key. You know, I mean, it's a funny thing. People learn Musar and Musar and Musar. Chazal give you the best Musar. Just look at what they tell you. The best Musar is in Chazal. Al Kain Yomra Moshe Lambo Cheshbon is the best Musar. You can't get better Musar than that. It means that if you could make that Cheshbon, if you could be a person that makes that Cheshbon, then your emotional will be a throw. Your emotional will be a throw. And then you'll be a happy person, because you'll make a decision based on rationality. And you'll say, this pleasure is good, this one's no good. You'll make a cheshbon. What's going to be if I partake of this great pleasure? Am I going to be happier in reality? Or is it going to lead to more unhappiness? You see, a person to make such a cheshbon, that's a different kind of, that's an odom, a moshel bitzur, a different kind of a person. That's the hardest thing to do. If you can do that, the criterion is very simple. It's obvious. What's the criterion? Exactly. The criterion is in which, I mean, of course, the ultimate criterion is in terms of learning. Which way will you ultimately become improved in terms of learning? But even on a psychological plane, the criterion is, can you honestly say that this is going to lead to an enhancement and of your life, of your happiness, of your pleasure, enjoyment, or is this just simply a momentary thrill which is fooling you into thinking that this satisfaction somehow or other is going to give you an ultimate pleasure, when you know yourself, if you think of cheshbon, it's just not going to work. You've been there before, and you see it doesn't work, and don't be a fool, it's not going to work this time either. You see? So if the person can make a cheshbon, that's the key. The key is the first step. If you can get to the first step, I think a person that is as intelligent can work out the rest. The first step is the hardest thing. Yeah. Sometimes a person has a certain need, he can't do it. I mean, a person can't say, a person has to know himself. It demands a certain knowledge of the self. And knowing under what situations a person can learn better. I mean, I remember there was somebody came to yeshiva. It was a sad thing. I mean, it was a sad thing for me. It was a sad thing certainly for him. And that was that the very good fellow in yeshiva, he's learning, he's married, but for some reason he couldn't concentrate. Yeah, he couldn't concentrate. He felt very guilty about the fact that he's not working. And it wasn't really a matter of finances. I'll tell you, if you really look at life, you'll see finances is not the big thing. It's finances is you project it onto finances, but it really is always something inside you. That's the thing. Everything. It's not really the finances. I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. Such things are needed, but most of the time it's not. But this fellow couldn't do it. I mean, he was so disturbed because he was raised to feel that this is something as a work ethic. He couldn't get out of his system, and he couldn't learn. It was an unfortunate thing. So we discussed it, and it turned out he's better off. He went to work, not a job that didn't. Nighttime he had a few hours a day, and he learns. Once we have dinner. But for that person at that time, anyways, to decide to sit and learn with the psychological baggage that he had, he would have wound up in depression. So that wouldn't accomplish anything. You know, I mean, you have to know. But that was a real problem. You know, so sometimes the cheshbon is the other way. I mean, you know, you have to be within reality. You have to opt for the utmost, but sometimes a person can't. And I'm just giving you an extreme example. It's a rare thing. This was a rare kind of situation. I haven't seen too many people with that kind of a problem. Not my issue. Anyway, but the thing is that you do have on a smaller scale. I'm giving you an exaggerated example, but on a smaller scale. Every problem really has to be weighed with the person's individual personality's makeup. It's not a simple thing. I'm not going into the individual things. I'm just telling you the main cheshbon has always got to be, what is this going to do for me in a week from now, a month from now, 6 months from now? What is this, where am I going to be based upon this... To partake of this enjoyment or not to partake of this enjoyment. This is going to cause me a waste of time. What would be so terrible if I don't have this enjoyment in life? You know, people always think they have to have enjoyment. You know what I mean? Vacation, this, must have this enjoyment. I don't have this enjoyment, that's it. When you're younger, it's more difficult because you haven't had as many experiences. But that's if a person has the knowledge when he's young, then when he has the experiences, he knows how to assess the experiences. And then he won't be fooled the next time. See, that's the gavus of Torah. And it's not just a system where it's true. In abstract, it's very difficult. You have one Vilna Goyim, you know, and most people can't do that. But if you have the knowledge, you know what to look for, your eyes are open. When you have the experiences, you'll know how to evaluate them properly. And then as you continue, you grow and you don't do the same, you don't make the same mistakes because you know how to evaluate. Experience without knowledge is worthless. You just keep going from one experience to the next. You're just repeating again and again the original experience in a different form, in a different shape. It doesn't do anything for you. That's why you must have. That's why Torah is so important, really. Because Torah tells you how to gain from the experience, how to analyze, how to understand it, and really make a change in your life. Otherwise, people just go from the same. Actually, most people just repeat constantly what they've been doing all their life in different form. Yeah. The Yisus Sharm quotes the Yerushalmi. And is the Shazir? He quotes the Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi says that God will make a demand of a person for every fruit that he didn't eat. On the contrary, for every fruit that he didn't eat. Why? It means for every enjoyment that he could have had. Because if a person partakes of his enjoyments are good, because a person needs a balance in order to learn. You have to be in learning, in order to learn, you have to be in a happy frame of mind. You can't be depressed, you're not going to learn. So if a person refused an enjoyment which would have improved his state of mind, you see, so then if he turned it down, that was wrong. God will take him to task for that. You may understand, which means, say, like we're saying, the important thing is his intelligence and chachma in what you're doing. There's no frum road. You have to use chachma, which is, you know, you're talking about the emotion of a Talmud as opposed to a son. That's the question. Yeah. So the thing is like this, that the emotion, what does Rambam say? The kishem shatamim kriyim bonim v'shinantum v'necha doesn't really mean banecha. Of course it means banecha too, but it means el tamidecha. So what does it mean? It says a mitzvah. What does Rambam say? Rambam says lashon Rambam is mitzvah for the rav is to Rav Oyves Talmidov, and it's more than just a relationship. Rav and Talmud is really a relationship. It's not just the world doesn't have such an idea. The world, the educational system of the world, they have the idea of a professor. Professor means he's a man who they only saw that you need the mechanical. He has to convey knowledge, but they don't have a concept of a Rav. So we have a different concept. A Rav is not someone that just gives a person information or even knowledge. A rav is there's a certain relationship between a rav and a talmud. And so the rambam says. So what does it mean? It means that the emotion of a rebbe towards a talmud is an emotional phenomena which has as its source, its primary expression is avin bein. That's the primary expression. But emotions are capable of a range of expression. In other words, there's a primary, and then it can be used in a secondary manner. It would be like, for instance, a person has a child and a person has an adopted child. Adopted child can never have the same, can't have the same feeling as a real child. It's impossible. But the feelings towards that child are drawn from the original natural emotion. So emotions have a large range of expression. See, there's primary, there's secondary, there's different shades. So actually, in a relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud, it's normal for the Rebbe to make use of the natural feeling that he has towards a Bein. It would be normal to have towards a Talmud, because it's a similar, in the mind, in the psyche, it's a similar kind of a phenomena, you see. But the person that is a great Talmud Chacham, really, so for him, that's the only real emotional experience. The experience of the Bein alone, you see, is lost after a while. And if the Bein is not really a Ben Torah, on the contrary, he'll experience that emotion to a greater degree with his Talmud than he will with his son. You see? Of course, if the son is also a Talmud Chacham, then the bond is very, very strong. Because then you have the primary and the secondary. You know what I mean? You have it on all levels. That was Yosef and Yaakov. That was Yaakov and Yosef. Then both are... that's a very strong bond. That's why you see that bond was so strong. And you see, Yaakov was in depression for 22 years. Because of it was such a powerful tie. Yes. See, emotions lend themselves to substitution. it'll grab onto something that's close to the original, and it could also find expression. Okay? Right off the cuff. The question is arranging your time. I would say the first, your first choice should be towards developing in the method of learning. That should be the first thing. Especially in the yeshiva years. This is the most important thing. It's an interesting thing, but you see even Chazal, like for instance, there are two orders here. There's the right logical order, and then there's the right order based upon the fact that you're not living in a logical society. Okay? So the right logical order would be like Chazal said. When you're young, you go through Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuv, you know, by heart, Mishnayos by heart. So by the time you're 14 or 15, this, you know, like nothing. Then you start analyzing. You start doing Gemara. That's the logical way. But in our society, it's impossible. Because it comes out the way kids are taught, by the time they're 15 or 16, they really know nothing. I mean, they don't know Tanakh, and they don't know some of the Mishnayos, and they don't know Derech Lani. You're starting off now in the 15, 16, you're starting. So the thing to concentrate on in this society is simply the ability, the keys, to get the keys. What are the keys? The keys are the ability to really learn through a piece of Gemara. I mean, a piece of Gemara, Rashi and Taisus. That's what you have to. You have to have the. That's what you should really strive for during the years of your yeshiva. So everything you do should be towards that goal. But in attaining that goal, you need two things. You need a certain amount of regulus, and that only comes through learning blood. I mean, there's no easy way. That is tedious. That's tediousness. To sit down there with a jastro and a bar and work. You got to really work tediously at just deciphering, translating the Gemara. I mean, just plain. Plain translation, you have to do it. You have to cover ground. You cannot do that by learning 5 bloody or 10 bloody or even 20 bloody. I mean, you've got to have a seder which should be set aside for covering ground in Gemara. And while it's important to know Tanakh and Nevi'im and all these things, I mean, what are the Chazal? So they asked him, how come the yeshivas don't learn? They don't know Tanakh. So he said, because they don't understand it. Right? Can't learn it. Learn the Parashat Yeshaya. You don't understand it. You just go right through. Looks like, what do you say? No ideas. So you're not going to understand it now, anyway. So I don't really think it's something you should spend time with right now. Right now, I think you should spend your time with mastering the derech and learning. And that involves two things. A certain amount of regulus, I would say at least a minimum of 2 blood a week in terms of bikkias. Okay, so this way at least you have 100 blood a year. Something. And then the rest of the time, concentrate on methodology. But I want you to know, you have to see, there's certain things you just must have seichel, and it's very, very difficult to... It's not, you know, there's no standard rule. For instance, an example. Let's say, for instance, you're working on a, and the main thing is like this. The main thing is when you're doing all these things, you should try as much as you can to do it by yourself. In other words, you should try as much as you can to work by yourself. In other words, people make a big mistake. A lot of times they want a very good chavrusa. Sometimes you're better off with not such a good chavrusa. I'm serious. Sometimes a little not as good as you. You see? So, why? Because you'll do more work. Don't tell him that, because then you won't have risen. But I'm just telling you that in reality, it's in many times, you know, people don't look for the right thing. You should really try to learn, do as much yourself. Don't go to somebody else, whether it's Chavrus or Rebbe, until you can't do it. But exhaust all your mental energies in terms of your own abilities first. Okay? You understand me? That's an important thing. Whether it's in laning or whether it's a svara. But then there's also a point of diminishing returns. There's a point where a person can sit on a kasha for 3 years. I mean, it's a waste of time. You can't. You know, you have to. That's what I'm telling you. It requires a certain seichel, which I can't possibly give you a formula for. A person has to know himself and know, I worked on this for an hour. I'm not going to get much further. Of course, you can't really say that because you go, I'll keep it in the back of my mind. Then it says, what does Chazal say? Hi kushya kashoyim by esrim atak and shnim. This kasha that we didn't work on for 22 years. It doesn't mean I sat there for 22 years working on this kasha. It means in the back of their minds, this question was always there. 22 years. It's a time that you think about it. And a lot of times you can't resolve it. You can't expect also to go through a sugya and get every... I'm going to go through a sugya, I'm going to get every teshus, every havni, every maskana. You can't... You don't do that because a lot of things you can't understand. Sometimes, you know, you learn a sugya, you just come to a dead end. And 5 years later, you come across another sugya, and it opens it up, and you see, now you understand it. So you can't... What are you going to do? I mean, if you sat there, you wouldn't... you'd never get it. So there's a point of diminishing returns. You have to very... You know, it's a balance of emotions here. On the one hand, you don't want to quit. On the other hand, if you're too persistent, you also lose. You know what I mean? You have to use your seichel. That depends on knowing yourself and how much effort you put in, how much effort you're capable of putting in, and to know when to withdraw also. I say a good general knows when to retreat is an important... is a true effort. I mean, you have to have that ability to retreat. You have to, now that's it. Okay, I worked on enough, I'm not going to get it. Next case. Well, plenty of things to work on. You see? You can't, you have to have a, that's where moderation is important. You know what I mean? So, of course, you're better off, if you're going to make a mistake, you're better off work on the working side than the non-working side. Because on the working side, you may overdo it, but you're still going to get somewhere. The non-working side, in other words, you go to other people, and then you just sit and learn, and you sit and learn for years. You don't really get anywhere. I mean, you have to work yourself. Because you can't learn how to play a violin by listening to somebody else. Yeah. Two concepts. One concept is an ego idea. That was a person enjoys his own svara more than somebody else's. That's an ego thing. That's really should enjoy as far as it opens up the sea. What does it make you say? Okay. But on the other hand, we say that a person should strive to work out svaras on his own as much as possible. Why? Simply because the process of learning, if a person isn't working out on his own, it means he's not involved in the process. You know, it shows a lack of involvement. That's why. Because when the mind's involved, the mind wants to work out the ideas. So if you say, look, you tell me the svara, I'll enjoy it just as much. It's true, but what's wrong over there is that if you could say such a thing, it means you're not really involved. Because to be involved means that your mind is drawn, it is attracted to it. If you could say, look, you say this for her. So that means to say that you're not really involved. So the reason why you should work on your own is not because the enjoyment of your svara should be greater than the enjoyment of somebody else's svara, but because of the fact that if you... don't, you understand, if you don't work on your own, it means you're not involved. I mean, you can't really say, a person that's excited is not going to say, two people are about to approach a gold mine, if there's an excitement there, you're not going to say, oh, you go elsewhere over here. You're not going to do it. So if you do that, it shows that you're not really excited about the ideas. You know, you're not up there. You're not, the mind isn't trailing right behind trying to get the solution. So there are two factors, involvement, and then the other factor is appreciation of a svara. Appreciation of a svara, that makes no difference. I mean, they have to make a trade. We do it all the time. Let's say, for instance, learn a sugya and learn a rishon. So why do you learn a rishon, and why are you learning by yourself? The answer is a trade-off. Because, yeah, it would be very nice if I could do it. But, can't do it. So that's a trade-off. That's true. That is absolutely correct. In other words, sometimes you have to make a decision and say that I'm better off listening to this shiur than learning on my own. Because on my own, I'm not going to get to that perspective. I won't get that level. And this is, but that's true also. That's true also in terms of individual gain as well as in terms of the absolute pursuit of knowledge. And we're talking on two levels here. One is the absolute pursuit of knowledge where a person is perfected, and the other one is the method of getting to that level, perfecting yourself and learning. That's true on both levels. I think the most productive kind of chavrusa should be a chavrusa which involves is more like a comparing of notes than learning b'chavrusa. Because if you learn b'chavrusa both together, somebody's losing out. The one that grasps it first gets the best, and the other one is, you know, he just didn't do it. Comparing notes kind of arrangement is much, much better. I think it's much better. Because then each one is working it out, and then you discuss the ideas. And then when you come to a point that really requires some serious thought, so then each person can, I mean, thinking can only think yourself. Thinking you can only think yourself. Then each person goes on his own and, you know, works on the idea. You know, as a chavrusha, it shouldn't be an infringement on your own advancing, on your own opportunities for advancing, your own learning yourself. It shouldn't be that way. I can take away the Rambam. I mean, the Rambam is pretty clear. The Rambam is in Hilchos Tamei Tora, Perek Aleph, Halacha Yud Gimel. Okay, where the Rambam talks about the fact, the Rambam says openly. He says, "Mitnei Shirov Hanashim Ein Daita Mechuvanos Leslamed." Elohim Motzios Divrei Torah LeDivrei Avoy LeFi Anias Daitan. That's what I say. Amacham Kamalas Bita Torah Kilo Mam Kilo Lim the Tiflus. Okay. Yep. And it's a tough area. And it's a tough area. And I would say like this, that What the Rambam means is one thing I will say. I'm not going to explain the full Rambam, but I would just say this: that what the Rambam means about the danger of teaching women Torah, and the Rambam seems to be pretty clear about that. That in other words, the Rambam is against really against a wholesale system of being malamed, of having like a yeshiva for women, like the same thing they have for men. I mean, he's against it. And he says clearly. He says, okay? So on the whole, it means to have a system, a yeshiva for just like for men is definitely against the Rambam. I don't know what kind of an issue it is, but it's definitely against the derech of the Masorah of all these years. The only thing I say is like this: that what does the Rambam mean? You see, you have to understand. In the Rambam situation, the Rambam's talking about Torah in the full sense of the word. And Torah, what he's talking about is Horah. Okay, hara. Now, and hara means decision making. The Rambam is saying is that to teach women Torah, where they will paskin shilas, is not the correct. Is not appropriate. Why? Because a woman by nature, her emotions are more powerful. And her intellect is not as free by nature, and therefore she will make wrong decisions. She'll make wrong decisions. That is essentially what the harm that the Rambam is talking about. So to show a woman, I'm just saying, I'm not answering the Rambam, because it's not so simple, but I'm just saying this, that there are two different things. To show a woman Chochmas HaTorah is one thing, but to learn with her in a way that she's going to be like a man, where she's going to be able to be mora hara on a wholesale scale, that is definitely against the Masara, because of the fact that a woman by nature does not have the ability to be as objective in decision making. In terms of abstract thought process does not on the whole have that same ability, and Torah has to be given over to those that by nature have the best ability in that area. Okay, it means to say, well, I mean, of course, men also are subjective, but it means, so you have to understand something. There's two halachas here. One halacha is insofar as the system of Talmud Torah is concerned. So the system of Talmud Torah was given over to the woman's not chayev. I mean, you see, she's not chayev. But on the same, by the same token, I mean, in terms of personal perfection, that she needs Torah. But what I'm saying is like this: in terms of the Mesorah and the Horah has to be given over to those in general who partake of. Men also not, Adam's not perfect, but it has to be given over to those who are more. Whose emotions lend themselves more to perfection in order to safeguard the system. It's the same kind of a thing Like on a bezin. You can't have a person on a bezin doesn't have a child. Aye, what do you mean he's the greatest chacham? But the answer is, we can't have a person doesn't have a child, doesn't have midas rachmanis, so you cannot have, the system demands, can't tolerate having people that are prone to certain weaknesses. And in terms of the Mesorah, a woman is prone to a certain weakness. That's not the entire measure of a woman. They're not a value. But we're saying this weakness definitely is there on the whole. That she is not as capable when it comes to abstract thought, and to making objective decisions based on pure abstract thought. The woman on the whole is not as capable as the man in that area. Okay. So that's why to give over the reins of the Harah to them and to women in general is not proper.
You see your proof?
That's correct, yeah. You see, he means, well, Richard means from B'nai Na'ach also, I see by B'nai Na'ach as well. It has to do with the nature of man, that you should opt for the highest, for the highest level in this area in order to safeguard the system. But it does mean, of course, that a particular woman could be there. I mean, the mother of the Drisha was a great person of halacha, and she paskin certain shavuos. I mean, there are many, many cases like that, individual cases. Wherever the chachma is there, Dvar, of course. Wherever the chachma is there, follow the chachma. But the question is, the system should be on the whole given over to those that have the best ability in that area. That's what I'd say in the Rambam. Ptuim, I could understand why they're putter. Because the chi of Talmud Torah is not just the chi for yourself, it's the chi for the Mesorah. Because you see that if you can learn, your child can learn better than you, you have to let your child learn. So you see, the chi of Talmud Torah is not in terms of yourself. The chi of Talmud Torah is structured for the perpetuation of the system. So that chi they're not involved in. That I understand. That's the bottom line. That's clear. But there is one thing that I would say, and that is, even though I said before, I don't like an answer of then and now. Those kind of answers don't really appeal to me. But I think in this case, you do have an exception, because the fact remains that over here, you see, and if you want to follow the system, that's one thing. Of the Rambam is one thing, but you cannot. Over here becomes a matter of amunah. In other words, if a woman doesn't understand Torah today, she goes to college, and she's in a situation where all the learning that's against Torah is available to her, and you don't arm her with the knowledge of Torah, that's simply a suicide. See, that's simply a suicide, because in the Rambam is speaking in a situation where the woman didn't learn. She didn't go to college, she didn't learn. But in our society, there's no question that a certain amount of Yediyas HaTorah is necessary in order to see the Amitas HaTorah. And if you don't have that, then the person's in danger of losing their Amunah. I mean, that's something that requires a weighty consideration. And it's not a then now answer. That's a reality. That happens to be reality.